on time, so I'm going to go ahead
sure,
and call
ahead. That's fine.
Our pre-council to order. We have one thing on the agenda today, which is a state of our court. So with us today is our municipal judge, Kavanaugh Knopes. Kavanaugh, what is the state of the court?
Well, as I always do, so I'm going to thank all my employees who do a really good job of helping people through the court system itself. And without them, obviously, it wouldn't function very well. So I really do appreciate them, and they're not here, so I do want to thank them. First, I'm going to go over a lot of things about municipal court, some of which you guys all know and some of which will be updated. But if you've heard this last year, you might be remembering some of it. If you haven't, then it may be something new. So what is municipal court? I think that's a great place to start. Municipal court is a division and part of the 13th Judicial Circuit of Boone County that does the municipal violations for the city of Columbia. In terms of framework, I think we have to think of just basic separation of powers. Obviously, on a national level, we have a constitution, right? And then you have the executive branch and the legislative branch, and then the courts are the federal and Supreme Court. And we have the same thing in the city of Columbia. We have a charter, which is our constitution. We have the council, which is the legislative branch. We have the city manager, which is the executive. And we have the court, which is me, and a couple alternate judges. And so it's the same kind of setup. And one of the things that's really important, I think, to realize is the city of Columbia is a constitutional charter city, which allows all issues except those that are preempted by the state legislature. So you have a tremendous amount of power. And so when you pass a legislation of any kind that either prohibits something or permits it, there has to be a mechanism for something to happen, right? For people to follow the law. And the mechanism in part is the executive branch through either police or animal control or parking tickets to try to effectuate what you've passed. And then the prosecutor then decides, after I've either gotten a ticket or gotten that information, am I going to file that in municipal court? Whatever that violation may be for either doing something that's prohibitive or not doing something that you've asked them to do. And then that becomes a case in municipal court. And then as the municipal court, we have to decide those cases and resolve them. And so if you think about it, really, it's the basic separation of powers, but it's how you ultimately get the things to function that you want to have happen that you've passed. And it's an important aspect of that. So you've thankfully, nicely, kindly appointed me for another 4 years. But there are also three alternate judges, and they have terms in the ordinance that can be from 4 years all the way down to one. So it's a maximum 4 years. I have really encouraged, when we have an opening, to go ahead and appoint somebody for 4 years. We don't have a lot of necessarily competition for that particular job, and when you have somebody that does a good job, continuing them and having them for 4 years versus having to redo that process, because it is some work on your part to kind of figure that out, I think is a good thing. So give you an idea, the ones that we currently have, I am now going to be until 2029, and then Andrew Briscoe is going to come up soon in May of 25, and so we'll have a discussion about whether or not you want me to just bring that back to you, or if you wanted to open up the process, we can do that, but we'll have that discussion a little later. Jeremy Turner's term is October 1 of 2027, and Judge Volkert's term is, Nicole Volkert, is December 4 of 27, so they're spaced out a little bit too.
Nicole.
So municipal court obviously is municipal ordinance violations. So what type of cases really are these? And common examples that are probably the most serious ones are DWIs, assaults, firing a gun off in the city limits, peace disturbance, MIPs, fake IDs, open containers, and trespass cases. Minor traffic violations, speeding, failure to yield, colliding, crosswalk violations, close campus violations, failure to register, no insurance, no license, parking, animal cases, dog off leash, not vaccinated, not licensed, barking or annoying animals, chicken at large, my favorite one. Only in Columbia.
Yeah.
Housing cases, nuisance cases, junk, weeds, lawns over 12 inches, building code violations, broken windows, peeling paint, dead trees, dangerous trees, rental certificates, fire code violations. I'm sure you never hear about any of these things. And of course you do, because these things occur and we have to have a mechanism for them, obviously, to come somewhere and to have a resolution. And we're going to talk about resolutions a little bit later, and I think that's important as well. Hours of operation. We did change hours of operation last year. We're open 40 hours a week, 7:30 to 5:30, including lunch, Monday through Thursday. and then two night courts. So we do 40 hours plus two night courts a month. And we changed that to meet some staffing issues at the time. But I will also tell you, it has been very, very positive for my staff. So last year, we had a 50% turnover rate. And it tends to be some of the same positions at the window. You can imagine a lot of people that come to municipal court are not very happy. They're there to go through the process, and they tend to vent and take it out on some people, and that can be a really, really hard job. It's not for everyone. But the last two people that we've hired, they came specifically for that work schedule. So that is really helping us. And I don't think it's diminished what the public has gotten, which is we're still open 7:30 over lunch to 5:30, 4 days a week. So hopefully with whatever schedule you have, you can come in either over lunch or before or after work and still make it. Now, I will say we're cheating a little bit on Fridays when we see somebody outside. Andrea does go out and help people in the interim. She's been doing that as people have adjusted to try to say, hey, you know, we're closed, but what can I do for you?
Can I ask you, is it okay for us to interrupt?
Yeah, please. Okay. Please.
You said problems with keeping people at the window. What is the window?
So the window is there's a bulletproof glass window where you take both payments and you interact with the public. That's the person who is the front facing interacting with the public. There's also, we interact with the public in different ways in the court, but that's where someone may be really angry about a parking ticket until they find out that the parking ticket is over at the prosecutor's office, and so they yell at you first before they go yell at the prosecutor's office. Or they're really upset about something of the case because the case hasn't been filed yet and they're trying to pay it online and they can't because, and I'll talk a little bit about this later, a prosecutor has to first get the ticket from police, then the prosecutor has to review the ticket to decide to pay the ticket. So let's say you came in, you got a ticket, you want to be accountable, and you just want to pay it immediately. You can do that with parking tickets, the way it's been arranged by the city, which is very nice with the prosecutor's office. They'll take them immediately and just pay them administratively. But you can't do that with any handwritten ticket by an officer. Part of the process is the prosecutor is reviewing that ticket to make sure there's probable cause and there's enough information to proceed, which is a good thing. But if you just want to pay the ticket, it doesn't exist in the court system yet because the prosecutor hasn't filed it, so you can't find it, you can't pay it, and it's frustrating. So the quicker that that can come from the police department to the prosecutor's office so that someone can pay it, the more cases that can be resolved by somebody they just want to take care of it. They can go online. You can click a button now. It's one of the positive things with Show Me Courts. It's very easy. I'm going to plead guilty. I'm going to click a button. I'm going to make a payment. Case is over. And we're getting towards about half of the cases being done that way. And I'm guessing if you could shorten the time frame from police ticket to prosecutor to getting it filed, you could even shrink that amount further. Yes.
How often does it happen that the prosecutor reviews the ticket and says, yeah, it's just, we're not going to prosecute?
I have no idea.
And how is the individual notified that, and like you said, maybe they want to be responsible, they know they've got to wait a week or whatever.
And they are probably not going to find out unless they come to our office and we're going to say, you know, this has not been filed yet. You might want to check with the prosecutor's office. Now, they may also come to court on their court date. And then they're going to come and usually when we're checking them in, they're not going to be on the docket. And then there's going to be an investigation by the court staff plus with the prosecutor staff. And at that point, the prosecutor staff will probably tell court staff, you know, the prosecutor decided not to file that right now. It doesn't mean we can't file it in the future because they still could, obviously, if more information came to light. But then that would be the mechanism. But no, it can be cases can actually go to circuit court, get forwarded to municipal court. So someone is got a court case from municipal court, circuit court. The case gets forwarded by the circuit court prosecutor to the municipal court prosecutor and may or may not file it in two different places. And you can imagine that could be frustrating and unpleasant. But obviously, you're trying to make sure something gets in the right place. Sorry.
No, thank you.
No, sure.
Sounds frustrating. If it was me, I'd be really annoyed.
Absolutely. And what I would tell you is, and here's the positive. The faster we can make that mechanism work where it goes seamlessly in the system, the faster you're giving an opportunity for someone not to be frustrated. And, of course, that's what I would encourage is however fast we can do that or faster, if we can make an improvement to that, I think that's a positive. And I think there is a way to do that where MU has it so it's seamlessly electronically transferred. CPD had that, and Jill's working on it, I believe, but she had to get a new person hired before they could kind of take it forward again. And so I think that's going to pick up the pace a little bit. And that's a positive. in the future. Obviously, we have arraignment dockets, and I'm going to talk about that in a second, but Monday afternoons, Wednesday mornings, and then at the night court twice a month. And one of the reasons to do that is obviously we're trying to hit every possible time frame where hopefully, whatever your schedule is, whether you work the night shift or whether you work the day shift or whether you're going to class, whether you don't, hopefully you can make one of those without missing work. And it's a really positive, so the officer then has that option. If they're talking with somebody and they know that they can't make it, they can write it for one of those particular dates. And that's been a positive impact for people. We had a lot more people in the last night court, and I'll talk about more tickets here in a second, but it was a lot more than we've normally had. But it was people that had either asked from an arraignment docket to be placed there or officers who had gone ahead and put them there. So I see that as a positive interaction where, yes, it's not pleasant to get a ticket, but if we can make it so it's easier for you to handle it, I think that's really a positive. What kind of dockets do you have? So we start out every morning at 8:30. The first docket is a video docket. And so on the video docket, we handle individuals who are in the Boone County Jail. So if you're in jail on a warrant from municipal court, I'm going to see you every morning except for weekends and holidays. And hopefully we're going to try to resolve your case and figure out what's going on or why you can't bond so that we can move that case forward very quickly. As you guys probably are well aware, the jail is not just full, it is overflowing, and we're housing people in lots of different places, and it's quite expensive. And you can imagine the jail probably doesn't want us to have that many people there at any one time. So we're going to resolve those cases fairly quickly unless something's going on. Then we're going to set up a quick bond hearing, and then we're going to have a reason of what's going on. And I'm going to obviously encourage someone, you know, well, are you going to come to trial? Do you want a trial? What's our next steps? Or do you want to resolve it today? Are we going to give you credit for time served and end this case? And that happens a lot.
Kevin,
We're
housing people in jails outside of Boone County, is that what you're saying, or what?
So we are not. The city is
well,
not.
But I mean, but the county
yes.
Sheriff's Office is.
Sheriff's Office.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think there was a, I heard a article, or it was a radio, I think, maybe I heard, that when I was coming to work.
Something in the news recently about that.
76 people, I believe, recently. And I will tell you, on occasion, they will call me on a weekend and say, can you please let ROR this person because we need the space.
ROR.
Release on your own recognizance.
Thank you.
Yeah, sorry about that. I apologize. I hate acronyms, and I that one just...
I don't appreciate it.
Well, if everybody knows what it is, it's fine, but that's not something that most people would know, so I apologize.
Kevin, did you say that you do a video conference every morning with anybody in jail
that is both on our warrant, and I also do it if they have a case that is coming up with us in the future. I usually try to do it to see if we can resolve those cases, because sometimes what you'll see happen is obviously if you have a much more serious thing and you're going to head off to the Department of Corrections, I would rather give you an opportunity to resolve the case or set it for a trial or be on top of it versus all of a sudden you're gone to the Department of Corrections and we have this open case with a warrant sitting here. We're not going to write anybody in from the Department of Corrections because they're not going to bring them to us. So you're leaving work to be handled in the future that probably is not going to get resolved. And I would rather go ahead and talk to them. A lot of people just want to be accountable and we can resolve the case right there. So in addition to warrants, I try to see just anybody who's got a municipal case in jail with some exceptions.
How many do you usually have?
So I had three this morning.
Is that... I mean, I know it moves, it changes, but is that about what you normally
no.
have, or usually less?
It totally ebbs and flows.
Okay.
We could have three in a row every single day for a week, and you could have none for 2 weeks.
Okay. I like the none for 2 weeks.
The randomness factor, I couldn't even fathom a guess. I used to really contemplate some of these things, like, why do so many people come to this court date and not that court date? And I'd figure it out, and I'd write it all down, and then the numbers... I could never find any divination to the numbers.
Okay.
I wish I could.
I used to feel that way about the agendas.
So most commonly, when someone's going to either get a ticket or receive a summons to come to municipal court, and when I say receive a summons, so obviously when you get a speeding ticket, you get the ticket in your hand when you get it. Sometimes, especially with a more complicated type of thing, like, let's say it's a stormwater violation. Usually there's not a written ticket for that. And I'm using that. We don't hardly have any stormwater violations. I can't remember the last one. But that would be a complicated matter where staff would have to go determine that there was a violation, maybe after several warnings, and then forward the pictures and the information to the prosecutor to consider it. A good one would be, like, housing issues. The peeling paint, can you please fix it? No, you can't fix it. There's also a broken gutter. Now I'm going to forward all that information to the prosecutor. They're going to write an information, and then they're going to either post that to the property or send them a letter saying, okay, now you need to come to court. That's what I mean by a summons, an informational summons. When individuals arrive at court, they're going to be handed their rights and given a short speech to highlight that material. They're going to be called in to check in arrival order. And this is a vast improvement. We used to do alphabetical order, and you had to wait forever if your last name was W, and I felt really bad for you. But we have done better, particularly with the pandemic, and I'm going to talk about a few more of those changes. Another important pandemic that came from the pandemic was because we had to have less people in the courtroom, I made more arraignment dockets. So there's a 9 o'clock and a 10 o'clock arraignment docket. There's also some 9:30 and 10:30 return dockets. But since you didn't show up the first time, there's probably not that many people that are coming for those, but we can kind of keep track of things for those dockets. But what that allows for you to do is, instead of having a rush of people, 60 people at the first docket, and whether you had W or not, and somebody had to wait 2 hours to have their court case, by staggering, we can probably get you in and out in probably 5 to 20 minutes. Much happier people. And I think much better service, really. And so that's something we kept as we were going. Different type of dockets, because I got sidetracked, so I got to balance myself out.
Much more respectful of people's time.
And I think people are happier, and they can know the next steps, and they can move on to the next steps with less angst. So different types of dockets. We have probation dockets, show cause dockets, which is return if you don't owe an amount of money. We have community support dockets, bond forfeiture dockets. I'm going to talk some more about these dockets in the future. Pretrial dockets, arraignment dockets, interpreter dockets, case reviews for parking ticket dockets, property services dockets, attorney disposition dockets, trial dockets, alternate judge dockets, and weddings. So those are spread throughout the week, and they have their time slots. Some of them are on the first Monday of the month, and some are on the third, and some are at different times. But that's just an idea. It gives you an idea of the different types of dockets that we're doing.
Weddings do you do per month?
So I have given those all to the alternate judges so they could have one full day of work, but I've done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of weddings before I did that. It is definitely one of the happiest things you do. And it's everything from just two people and no witnesses to wedding parties with video cameras and guitars and flowers and everything you can imagine to I'm with Batman t-shirts pointing at each other. I mean, it's really nice. It's a free service that we provide to everybody, and we provide a lot more slots than the circuit court does. Mm-hmm. So it's been really critical to kind of provide that service. It's well used and a happy service, mm-hmm. One of the few we get to give. So the defendant, when they first arrive, they're called up, and I read the charge to them. That's called the arraignment. And then the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to ask them, do you need time to talk to an attorney? And I've gone over the rights with them, and that's one of the things I've gone over. And it's everyone's right to have an attorney. And sometimes they're going to look at you like deer in the headlights, like, I don't know what's going on. And so I'm going to say, well, there are four basic options. Would you like me to go over those four basic options with you? There are three not guilty options and a guilty option. Not guilty options are you can hire an attorney to advocate for you always. That's your right. You can talk with the prosecutor at a second call and see if you can resolve your case, but you don't have to talk to the prosecutor. They're on the other side of you. You can set the case for trial, and it's the prosecutor's burden to prove you guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. It's not your burden to prove yourself innocent. Or you can plead guilty, and I'm happy to listen to anything you have to say, but I can't make you not guilty at that point. I can just take it into the proper punishment, and that really helps people out. Pre-trial conferences are really important. The prosecutor taking the time to do that is really important, and I have to applaud them for doing it. It heads off a tremendous amount of trials. A lot of people come to municipal court and they really just want to tell you something about what happened. It's not necessarily they even want to say that they're not guilty. I get a lot of, I'd like to plead guilty, but judge, will you listen to what I have to say? And they want to be heard. And so if they wanted to plead not guilty and the prosecutor's willing to listen to them, maybe there's some facts the prosecutor doesn't know. Well, there's some facts that an individual doesn't know. Maybe they don't quite remember it right. Maybe they had a beer too many. And there's a photo or a video of it. No, I don't remember that, right? Or maybe it is, there's a different perspective and they have some information that the prosecutor hasn't seen. The prosecutor can take that into account. It allows for them to come out and work out basically a deal of how this case is going to be resolved or to go ahead and set it for trial if there's a disagreement. And that's really positive because if you can resolve those cases, then the trial docket's not going to get it full. And if you're resolving those cases, the person had their say, the prosecutor is looking out for the public, and you have a resolution. And you're done, and whether that's a probation or a fine, the case is over, and usually people are more satisfied that way because they've had, again, a chance to say or talk to somebody. If someone decides to plead guilty, I'm going to get the facts and recommendation from the prosecutor. So the prosecutor is going to tell me the basic facts, and then they're also going to make a recommendation as to the outcome of the case. Many, many times I'll ask the defendant, does that sound fair to you? And they'll say yes, and I'm like, okay, great. And then we'll go on, and then I'm going to ask them, can you afford to pay, that's typically going to be a fine. Can you afford to pay that fine today? And sometimes they're going to say no, and I'm going to say, do you think you could pay it in 4 to 6 weeks? 99% of the time, someone says, yes, I can pay it in 4 to 6 weeks. Now, doesn't mean they really can, but they'll say that. I also tell them right then, I let everybody do community service work at $15 an hour. And that's a really important aspect because some people are very cognizant and don't want to embarrass what they feel like is embarrassed, that I don't want to tell you, judges, I can't even pay my utility bills and my rent this month, but I'm not going to tell you that. I'm just going to try to get out of here. By giving people the opportunity to do community service work, Food Bank, Senior Center, Habitat for Humanity, Love Inc., City of Columbia, we have a whole list of places that are pre-approved. I've got a probation officer court analyst that kind of organizes that and accepts those in. We get those filed. I do $15 an hour. And I've found that that's to be very, very positive for individuals who are really struggling but want to take advantage of it. And I sometimes find that out at the first hearing when they come back, and that's when they'll tell me, Judge, I can't make it. That's why I haven't done anything. And then we'll have a further discussion. Yes.
What kind of schedules can they arrange for community service?
So there's many
working person.
So there are many types of schedules, and I have ways to kind of help with that. So during the pandemic, to give you an example, we had to have a way to do community service work kind of by yourself, right? Because all community service work was really going to meet other people to do community service work. So I came up with this. It's a free, you can use any running app. I ended up using the free Adidas running app, and it shows exactly where you walk. So I went and walked down the MKT trail, and I picked up trash. And you can see me walk back and forth on this app, and it also shows the time. So if you have a schedule that just cannot do any other type of community service work, I don't usually start with that, because I would like you to pick one of the different organizations that kind of do that. But if you come back and say, Judge, I work 2 jobs, 40 hours a week, I have one Sunday, and I can't find anything on this list that will do that. Then I'll say, hey, you know, we have this app. You can do it this way. We've had individuals that aren't physically able to even do that. And so I'll do, well, let's try FDIC finance classes. And the city had this program that was a training program, and I saw, I was like, oh, this is great. This is great financial education. And we'll talk a little bit more about alternative sentencing. But there's 14 hours of this, and it's like a little game, and it educates you on how to balance a budget, how to get a checking account. And so I'll try to give them credit towards that if they are incapable of doing some of the other things. The other thing I do, and this is way different than circuit court, is I am willing to let you make a small payment and either come visit me basically till the end of time, as long as you keep making that small payment and doing it. Circuit court is very much, you have X amount of time, if you don't do it in X amount of time, you're going to get another fee on top of that, and it's going to go to collections. I would much rather you chip away at it and come tell me, this is why I can't afford it, this is what I'm doing. And as long as you keep up with that and keep visiting me, or even tell me, everything's falling apart, this is what's going on, but you keep visiting me, I'm going to do a little community service work instead. I think that's a much more positive outcome and leads to greater accountability than a random fine that's sent to collections and then nothing occurs. I don't feel like that's really positive.
Kavanaugh minimal payment plan.
Yes. Or minimal community service work plan. And what I will tell you is people tend to actually have an upward trajectory after they realize that you're willing to work with them, they really try hard to make that work, whether it's with community service work or fines. It's positive. The difference for a pretrial conference versus a second call. So I kind of described a second call. A pretrial conference is something that's a little bit more complicated. That's to meet with the prosecutor, and I'm not there in the room, so they can talk about the facts. Because obviously I can't hear your case if I'm there when you talk about the facts. But a pretrial conference, instead of meeting with the prosecutor right afterwards, these are typically going to be DUSs and NOOPs, a review of video evidence.
Kavanaugh acronyms.
Oh, yep, sorry. Driving under suspended and driving without a valid operator's license.
Thank you.
My apologies. And reviewing like a body camera or reviewing a car camera to discuss the resolution of the case that might be a little trickier. One of the things the prosecutor does, which I think is also very good, is they are trying to make sure individuals get their licenses back. So if they're eligible to reinstate their driver's license, to go ahead and get the driver's license, to get insurance, to become legal, because we don't have the best public transport in the world. And so people tend to drive to go to work and do what they're going to do. And if you have a driving under suspended and get convicted of that, you are then suspended for another year. And so if you don't take the opportunity to break the cycle, you will start spinning in a cycle. And the fourth one's a felony. Now, it doesn't always get filed as a felony. But as you can imagine, given our what we have, I think the prosecutor taking the time to get people to compliance is important. And so typically, that may take a while, right? They may have to take a SATOP class. They may have to, which is very expensive. They may need to pay a reinstatement fee. They need to re-engage with a judgment suspension and say, I'm going to be on a payment plan to pay this issue. But all of those, I think, are also positive in that they're re-engaging with society to try to become compliant. Yes?
If their driver's license was suspended from another county or another Missouri jurisdiction.
Very common, or an interstate suspension.
Interstate. And they are pulled over here, does that add to that fourth countdown?
Well, so.
And what is their path to resolve that? Because I do hear from a lot of people who are driving without a license.
So I can't tell you, you have to verify the different priors. And so what I could say is they are picking up another suspension ticket. And obviously, that's coming to municipal court because it was a CPD officer. Now, a CPD officer could also send them to state court if they thought it was serious enough. They have an option to do either. But in that particular case, what the prosecutor is going to usually tell them is, I want you to resolve what is causing your suspension so you can then get reinstated with the Department of Revenue, pay the reinstatement fee. Typically, there's going to be SR-22 insurance, which is very expensive. There's a lot of steps that is involved. And so typically, they're going to meet with the prosecutor over multiple months until all those steps are fulfilled, until they become compliant, before then the prosecutor is then going to amend it to something else that's not going to cause the year suspension.
Yeah.
Typically, the companion ticket, probably where they got pulled over, which is probably a tags ticket or a temporary expired tags or something like that. Although it could be something else. It could be a speed, left-hand turn. I mean, lots of different possibilities.
Are they going to have to go back and work with a prosecutor from a different county or a different state? They don't always know.
So I can't tell you that, right?
I'm sure.
What I can tell you is typically a suspension is caused by something. Mm-hmm. And typically there is a remedy, whether it's in that other state or here, that is going to resolve that suspension. And then, because the prosecutor is saying, look, what I need from you is your actual driver's license and a reinstatement letter from Missouri. That's what the prosecutor is going to want to see. And to get both of those things, you're going to have to fix all the different anomalies that you may have. And it can be extremely expensive. And it can take a long time. And it can be really difficult, especially if you're here and the suspension is in 5 states away. Mistakes can happen. I'm not saying that mistakes don't ever happen. That's also a possibility. But you still have to then maybe hire an attorney in that other state to correct that mistake, and that may be a long process. ultimately, sometimes the process is too long, and they may just say, I can't go on, or I may have to even say, you know, we have to go ahead and set this case for trial, and most people don't do that. I mean, at that point, they just say, I would like to plead guilty.
Do we have demographic information, particularly as relates to income for who comes to municipal? I wouldn't think so, but all this is causing me to realize that, especially for people of low income, once you get into these kinds of cycles, it can become
sure.
greater and greater, more cyclical.
I can tell you that anecdotally, more people come to municipal court that have different types of income issues. One of the things I was super excited about, to give you an example, is remember when they just passed recently that said that when you bought a used car, they now had to add the property tax into the value of the car. So that was part of buying the car, because this is what happened a lot. Individuals would buy a car with all the money they had so they could get to their job, not realizing that they had to then pay the property tax that they can't afford, and you can't get your license. And so they would have these temp tags that were going forever, and because they were trying to pay that bill that I think they didn't have the wherewithal to understand that they needed to pay. And so by fixing that, I think, now they may have a bigger loan because of that. I mean, it's a whole other issue, but at least then you're not having that particular problem.
Property tax thing is a discussion that we can't handle because we don't take care of it, but it's a bad deal.
And so there are many, many individuals who I would say are certainly economically challenged, are working really hard, multiple jobs, and barely getting by with rent and cars and everything else. I mean, they'll tell me that. And certainly some of the people, they'll do community service work because they are using their money for every single other thing that they need. Those are probably some of the individuals that are working the hardest at it, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Now, I will also tell you there are also people that they just don't care, and they got a ticket in some other state, and they have plenty of means, and, I guess I finally have caught up with me, and they'll probably hire an attorney in another state to take care of it, and they hire an attorney here to take care of it, and, you know, totally different scenarios. It's all across the board. But that's less common, certainly. So after an individual gets a new court date with 4 to 6 weeks, if they pay it 100% or did the community service work 100% before that court date that I give them, it cancels the court date. So I'm giving it's an opportunity that if you knock it out, you're just done. I also make sure to let them know that, look, if you're making a payment, email the court analyst, and if you've made a substantial payment, she's going to come to me and say, can I have a continuance so I don't miss work or whatever, and we routinely do that as long as you're on track. Or if life really happens to you, I say, you got to come back and see me and tell me what's going on. Because if you don't come back and see me and tell me what's going on, I don't know. And I'm going to assume the worst. So how does that kind of work? So the first time you don't, let's say you don't come to court at all. I think that's a better place to start. And then we'll go back at this because it's the end. So the first time you don't go to court, I am going to send you out an invitation to come back. And the reason it's an invitation is I still want you to be able to pay online. If I send you a summons, it cancels in the system. The system kind of runs us sometimes. If I send you a summons, it will cancel your ability to go ahead and just plead guilty and pay. And so people just make mistakes and they miss a court, or they have a class that's scheduled and they have a test and they're freaking out. And they just may need more time to pay it online. So that gives them another mechanism. We'll set it 2 weeks out, and then they can just pay it and take care of it. If you miss the next one, then I send you a summons. Now it ends your ability to pay. And now I'm expecting you to come to court. So you had your ticket date, you had your invitation date, and now you have, please come or else. And obviously then if you don't come for that date, the prosecutor usually is going to ask for a warrant. Now, on some minor things, the prosecutor might be, you know, judge, this is what it is. I'm going to go ahead and we'll do one more summons or something like that. But same thing is true, like on a payment date. If you missed your first one, I'm going to remind you if you missed your date. If you miss your next one, now if you've made a payment and missed one, I might be a little more flexible, and there's a little bit more chaos to it, so I try to keep track of that. Then I'm going to probably set you for a show cause hearing in the future, either on the second or third miss. And what that is I am telling you, you need to come in and tell me why you haven't either done community service work or made payments, right? Because I've made both available to you. And I want you to be accountable. And or why can't you do that? Now, what usually has happened is that someone will come in, and I'll explain to them, do you understand what the next step of the process is? It's kind of a scary letter. And the next step of the process really is I'm going to appoint you a public defender. Why do you think I would appoint them a public defender?
Because they need legal counsel.
They do, because they might go to jail.
Yeah.
Because are you willfully just thumbing your nose, or are you really just something's happening? And now, in 8 years, I think I've appointed the public defender 3 times. So what really needs to happen is we need to have a heart-to-heart about what's going on and how you're going to handle this. And once we do, then you're going to come back and see me, and I'm going to help you through it, as long as you keep coming back to see me. The times that I appointed a public defender, we have never actually had a hearing because the public defender has helped us resolve the case. And only one of those times was there a person that was such a jerk that I really wished that we'd had a hearing because I wished I would put him in jail. And basically because he kept saying he had all the money and he just didn't care and was telling people that. Not me, but of course. Now, that person is extremely rare, right? One person in 8 years. So this is, it's a mechanism where I think people can become accountable. Now, if you choose not to engage the system, you're going to get a warrant. And that's unavoidable. And I want to be clear, is part of the reason you have to come to court is you need to handle this somehow. Whether that's a trial, whether that's a payment, whether that's community service work, you have to handle it. You can't ignore it. So, let's see. Oh, you get a warrant. At this point, let's say that you get a warrant. An officer comes and arrests you because you had another traffic interaction. That's the typical way, because there's not a lot of finding people, but typically you have a warrant. And so what can an officer do at that point? Well, the officer can arrest the person, and they can post a bond because there'll be a set bond amount for it. The officer can call me and ask for the person to be released on their own recognizance. An officer could also call me and say, there's nothing on the bond schedule for this particular charge. I would really like you to put a warrant on someone. That's very rare, but it has happened. But to give you an example, during the pandemic, I got called a lot, right, because they didn't want to put people in the Boone County Jail and spread COVID. But I've also been called where officers have looked and said, this was a driving without a license charge from the warrant date, but the person had their license before that date. So that doesn't make any sense, right? There's probably some kind of error. Or this person swears they hired an attorney, and I believe them. Will you release this person and handle it? And I'll say, okay, yep, I'll do that. And I want you to see you the next day. Could you come into court? You know, I'm recalling the warrant, but I want to see you. Make sure that we're all on the same page. In both those cases, that was accurate. The attorney did file, and it was a glitch in the system, and it had been held up. And the other case, there was a probation, and the person did get their license and either had a misunderstanding with the prior judge to me that they needed to show that, or did show that, and there was a glitch. There's lots and lots of cases. There are going to be some glitches that happen, unfortunately. I wish that wasn't true. I wish everything was 100% perfect. But in all bureaucracies, there are going to be glitches. And so you have these mechanisms that are second reviews or where some human has the ability to fix something. And I think it's really important, the more you have this is how we do it and this is how we check it, I think the better off your system's going to be. And so we always try to have a double check for most things. But that's a good double check that officers even themselves can have and to effectuate.
Can I ask some questions about this process? So they have a invitation, then a summons.
Correct.
Then a warrant.
Typically, yes.
How does an invitation come to them? What form
is
that?
It's a mail. It's a letter.
A letter.
You missed court.
To a physical address.
To a physical, the last known physical address. So this is another issue. And
yeah.
It's an unavoidable issue that is terrible.
We'll move.
We go off of the DMV address or the last known court and CaseNet address that gets changed by the last court that touches it. And that's where the mail goes. Now, when I do consider a warrant, we'll see if there's returned mail. If there is returned mail, I will ask, hey, is there another address for this? And if we find another, oh, yeah, they just went to court in Cooper County, and there's a new address. Then we might try to send one more summons to the new address because obviously, right, they weren't getting it at the old address. But the expectation from the court system as a whole is you have to update your address. And obviously, on the ticket, the officer asks you what's your address when you get the ticket. And so if you don't give them the right address, if you don't have an address, that's a whole other issue. And we'll talk about that in a minute when we talk about community support docket and homelessness a little bit. But that happens. And I will even tell you that at one point when we were sending out reminders to individuals, I was trying to track it a long time ago when I first started, about 25% of addresses died within, I think it was 4 or 6 weeks of when we sent a piece of mail. Yeah. Because the instability of where you're staying.
Yeah.
And I don't have a way to correct that. Now, I will tell you that there's a partial solution, but
we'll get to that.
We'll get to that.
It seems like I'm talking, and I know this whole group of people who are not going to consider themselves homeless.
Yes.
And yet are truly transient and don't have an address, or will give an address and will always have an address, but it's going to change within...
They may be living in their car, they may be living on a couch, they may be living in a hotel room. I mean, there's a whole... Now, what I do, and this is important too, when you come to court, if you do make it to court, you leave there with a piece of paper that has your next court date on it. So we have these little cards that you hand out, and the clerk writes down your case number and your court date, so you can sign up on CaseNet if you have the ability to do, which not everybody has, right? You can have it track your case and ping you and also let you know what's going on. But you leave the courtroom with that court date. If you get a stay of judgment from me or probation from me, you leave the courtroom with the original that we scanned in that you signed with your next court date on it. So I eliminate that for everybody that does make it in. If you don't make it in and you come and turn yourself in, if you find that you have a warrant, I am very generous because I want to encourage people to turn themselves in, right? We don't have the resources to find everybody. We just don't. And the police aren't going to be able to do that. And so if you come and turn yourself in, I am going to, what are we going to do? Do you want to plead guilty? Do you want to have a trial? What is the next step? And I'll tell everybody, I'm going to ROR, release you on your own recognizance.
Gotcha.
This time.
I'm on it now.
No, my apologies.
Roger that.
But
I'm not good.
You need to promise me you're going to show up for all your court dates from now on. And if you don't, what's going to happen? You're going to get a warrant, you're going to go to jail, and we're going to have that video conversation over the jail. But at that point, right, I think we've set the expectation, and most people, after I've said that, they made their promise, and if they don't, then either something is more scary than me, which that happens, right, or something is more imperative than me, and that can happen too, or they make it.
Do you have a mechanism for identifying when someone needs assistance understanding the material that you gave them, such as court documents? And
let's talk about interpreter documents.
Some very high functioning appearing folks are going to be overwhelmed and not understand as soon as they've left.
So a couple things. First, interpreter dockets. So we have interpreter dockets. So if it's clear either from me or from staff, and usually it's staff when they first come up to be checked in, that they can't speak the language that we have. So we have a Kinyarwanda, Tigrinya, Spanish, Mandarin, South Pacific dialects. Any dialect you can imagine we probably have, and we have those interpreter dockets. And so what we do is we have you come to that docket, and then we call in a language line. The only one that we really have failed at is the South Pacific dialect. There's like a couple hundred people that speak this one. And we finally just went to Google Translate. Because we kept calling, and they kept saying, oh, yeah, one day we'll have this. I'm like, can we make an appointment for it? And they're like, no, you just got to keep randomly calling. And the individual spoke some English, and I just wanted to make sure that they understood the nuanced pieces of it. It's not perfect. It's not ideal, but we got through it. Now, typically, though, you have somebody that I swear in as an interpreter and that they don't give legal advice, and then they interpret it back and forth, and I feel highly confident. I also try to then, when we give out that information, like I was telling you earlier, we go into Google Translate, the clerk does, and translate that into their natural language. Now, the one we file in our system is the English one. But we also give then a Spanish copy or a Mandarin copy or whatever else copy, so that hopefully they can look at both to kind of know what's going on. Now, someone that doesn't have capacity, that's a different issue, and we can talk about the city social workers and the community support docket. Well, let's set that aside for now. We'll get, I promise.
I think all of my questions end there eventually, okay. Anyway.
But I think it's important. Certainly we want everybody to know what's going on.
I wonder how you flag people for the community support docket.
And I will talk, we can talk about that too.
Let him get to it.
No, sorry, sorry.
I will.
This is the part. Please answer questions, but yeah. I promise I will try to get through some of this stuff. So we do have a new case system. We started with Show Me Courts. It's mandatory by the state. It's got its positives. We do have an old case system. We are going to start shutting that down. So the prosecutor has started to file on the really old parking tickets to dismiss those. So I don't know if you noticed, you get two reports from me. And one of them, you notice, there are more nollies are starting to creep into that. And so that system ultimately just needs to be shut down completely. And we're going to do that. I've got more staff time right now, and it's the ideal time to do it. We started with parking tickets. I'm back to my handwriting. So these are on old docket sheets. So I have to actually stamp and sign them. So we're doing that. But set that aside for a second. Parking tickets, one thing to know quickly about that is they are court cases, but the prosecutor tends to handle them administratively and not file them unless somebody really is an ne'er-do-well. Now, that's not true if an officer writes you a ticket, but when an officer writes you a ticket, that's not really qualified, according to OSCA and the courts, as a parking ticket. Even if it might be about parking, it's actually a traffic violation. All parking is technically a traffic violation because you're trying to get people to move. When you even hit with a meter because of an old court case. Also, the thing to know is parking tickets always go to the owner of a vehicle. So if you get a mad parent that says, I never been in Columbia my whole life, why do I have 15 parking tickets? Because your kid goes here. Which you knew when you called and yelled at you about it. Anyway. Trials in de novo circuit court, and then I'm going to get to community support docket next. We are a court of limited jurisdiction. So what happens is, let's say you go through the whole process and you have a trial, and let's say I find you guilty and I give you a sentence, a fine. You have the ability to de novo appeal to the circuit court. And what that means is you start new, a brand new case. You can have new defenses. It's not anything to do like a normal appeal with you're stuck with the original facts. You just start over. And now, if I grant you a suspended imposition, a sentence, because it's a probation, you actually don't have the ability to appeal because I haven't given you a sentence yet. That's a little quirk. But you need to remember, the idea in municipal court is it's a faster way to adjudicate cases that's simpler. But circuit, when you go over there, you're going to be on the record. So there's no court reporter. So a lot of sovereign citizens are really disappointed when they come in to be on the record and be angry with us. And I explained to him, I'm really sorry. I understand that you believe you're a corporation, but if you really want to appeal this, I don't have a record here. I'm happy to give you a trial, and if you win, great. And if you lose, you can go to the place of the record, or you can go over there right now and ask for a jury trial. That happens sometimes. To community support docket. So, obviously, I have a community support docket. I started it almost 7.5 years ago after I started. So this morning, and we have individuals who live on couches, who live in hotel rooms, who literally live on the streets. And they have different types of designations of homelessness. I'm sure you guys know a lot more about this than you've ever wanted to know recently. And it is very different, the different levels of homelessness that someone they might still have a job. They might be going to the gym to get a shower and everything. And they just are dipping down because they lost their housing. Or they could be chronic with a severe substance abuse issue, living rough. So this morning, we had 42 individuals on the community support docket. We had 3 individuals on the community support docket that were in jail, all 3, when you were asking. And I would say we had probably about more than a fourth of the individuals on the docket appeared. And that's a very good rate for appearances, particularly for that docket. The other thing I would tell you is the idea for that was, originally when I started it, was to break the cycle, which was, you're living in the park. I get a ticket for living in the park. I get arrested. My address is the streets of Columbia, which you're never going to get. And then an officer has to go arrest you, take you to the Boone County Jail, and you're going to get credit for time served. And then you're going to go back to the park. and we spend the city's resources to accomplish pretty much nothing. I was like, we can't do any worse than this. So how can we do better? And so I got the police and everybody together, and I'm like, well, what can we do? And so at the time, Turning Point said, well, you know, you can get mail here. And I was like, okay, well, let's start with that. Officers, would you, when you write the ticket, would you explain that to an individual who's homeless and say, hey, do you know you can get your mail at Turning Point? Would you like me to put that on your summons, the Wilkes Boulevard address, and then you can get your court notice? And then also the officer could set you for a community support docket. And so one of the ways, right, the solution was, obviously, if I see a Wilkes Boulevard address or if the officer puts them directly on community support docket, then obviously that's a flag, right? We know that they need to be on community support docket. But additionally, the idea was, is, well, what services do we have to try to solve the problem, right? And we didn't make any new services in the beginning. We just talked to everybody, and like, I was like, would you, everybody here that I talked to that was involved, because it really started with a homeless outreach team and the idea of the Functional Zero Task Force, and this has been a while. But the idea of this task force, and it was Steve Hollis that had just randomly talked to me about this when I was a city attorney. And I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. Maybe we can take all those people that are working, they were going out to homeless camps and working with people out in the streets. And I was seeing a lot of people in court that obviously I think that they weren't seeing that were also homeless of various stages. You know, maybe not the homeless stage that they were working on, but maybe heading that direction. And my thought was, well, wait a minute. Would you guys all be willing to just come to a docket once a month? And if we can catch somebody early, then we will have prevented the cycle maybe even from starting. And so that was the kind of the original idea. Now, it's improved since then, of course, over time, and more people have participated. And we started, it was homelessness and veterans. In the very first community support docket, one veteran came, and obviously no one who was homeless came that docket. And it took a while for any amount of trust to be built up that you would want to come to a court at all and that something different was going to happen. And you got to remember, this only really works as the prosecutor is willing to work with individuals. And so what I kind of started with is, okay, well, what are the top three things that you could work on? And they can be a lot of different things. So temporary housing is usually number one, right? I would like to get housing. Medical care, frostbite, spider bite wounds. You know, get those things addressed. Social Security card. A driver's license so you can get a job, a winter coat. There's a lot of lists, and I'll ask them, please come up with your list. What do you need? What is your priorities? And then we'll have them keep coming back at least hopefully three times, and then the prosecutor will either make a deferral, and a lot of times too, I will find out at a show cause hearing that now the individual's homeless, and they've already pled out and have a fine, but I'll still put them on community support docket to try to connect them to services, and then for each task they accomplish, I'll give them a credit. I'm going to knock off $25 towards your fine because you got your driver's license, or you're working on getting a disability, or you're trying to improve yourself somehow. So that's one of the things that we're trying to do. And I can tell you that with every kind of result that you can think of, I've had people die and never come back. I've had people come back with frostbitten fingers. I've had people, a lot of individuals who have a non-alcoholic substance dependency, they're off to circuit court and DOC or drug court or something before they can even come back, no matter what they're trying to accomplish, right? I've only had one person with a severe substance abuse issue that was really successful. And she left all her friends and everyone else and went to move on a farm with her grandfather. But that's really hard.
Hard number, but at least one person.
Why? One. Now, with alcohol, it's a little bit different. I've had more anecdotal success with individuals who had their moment and they decide to dry out, they go into inpatient treatment. And I saw an individual today. I didn't even hardly recognize him from the first time I'd seen him. But he's now caring, and he's now sober. He's been sober since the first time he came to me support docket. But he's getting a lot of help because of what's occurring. One of the really positive things that the city did recently is obviously they have a social worker, and now two social workers, that both work with community support docket and with DIVRT, which is kind of a separate thing, so I'm not going to go into that. But the important factor with that is, and I think it's really positive, is there are individuals that do not have the capacity to advocate for themselves or even fill out the paperwork for things that they might be eligible for. And also, if you're new and you're just entering this, you may not know that you're eligible for food stamps. You may not know where free diapers are. You may not know just the basic things that society actually has for you if that happens, but you don't know they exist. And so if I come across someone at arraignment docket, I can immediately now say, here's Janie's information, go to the health department, contact this person before you ever even come back to community support docket for your first time, so you can start working on your three things ahead of time and maybe not have anything get worse. And so that's where you see some of the most positive results is in some of those areas. Anecdotally, I can't give you numbers. I can't say that it's perfect. It's not. But those are some of the good examples. So also, if someone is a lower capacity to understand or deal with something, whether that's a mental health issue or just a capacity issue, the city social worker can communicate with a prosecutor that can, and she can also say, you know, this person is actually going to go into institutionalized care, into care where they have a support network, but they cannot really engage in this. They don't have the capacity to do that. The prosecutor can then take that into account and say, well, they're not going to come back to do this wrong thing because they're now staying in this particular group home. I'm gonna dismiss that case.
How do you identify, and is there a way to assist the group of people who, it's not that they have the lack of capacity to care for themselves and need a group home, but they have the lack of capacity to, in an adult way, process complicated information like this, and or
let me give you an example.
A diagnosed yet invisible
sure.
mental health issue.
So I'll give you an example where an individual was clearly a schizophrenic, and a municipal court does not have the capacity to help with that. Now, whether or not they can get treatment through Burrell or something else, I can't tell you what the criteria is or how that works, but in theory it's possible. So I tried to reach out to circuit court because they had a mental health court and say, hey, we're in the circuit. Will you please take this individual? Now, you got to remember, most of those type of treatment courts are very rigorous about felonies, even the DWI court. And so they have a limited number of spots, and they could not take them because their spots were basically full. Mm-hmm. I even found out that person got a state court charge, and I tried to reach back out, but by the time I had reached back out and they had figured out who he was, he had already pled and gone on his way. And so he had capacity and knowledge to understand probably right from wrong, but certainly he really did believe there were people that were wanting to kill him. Now, I wasn't afraid particularly, but he believed that. And courts cannot assess, I mean, the court is never going to be able to take care of a mental health issue. That's not what courts do.
Yeah, I'm not asking
the
court to take care of a mental health issue.
I was trying to tell you the realistic limitations.
How we identify when people don't understand the document that they've been handed because it's...
So sometimes it's obvious.
Yeah.
Sometimes someone is going to be an advocate or a friend or the... Obviously, by having the various caseworkers there from different organizations, they may know that individual has an issue, and I would invite them up, certainly, to help them communicate with the prosecutor's office.
Yeah.
You got to remember, a lot of what we're doing at the community support docket is really, I am organizing this so that the information that is typically not shared with the prosecutor gets shared from either service providers or the individual themselves. That a normal person would do at a pretrial conference, right, or at a second call, but these individuals cannot, or this is the only mechanism for that to occur. That's what's really kind of different about it, but that gives the prosecutor a lot of different opportunities to work with them in various ways. Now, sometimes I get so much information that if it goes to where I've had an individual who finally decided, no, I want to have a trial, but I had had so much information about that individual because they wanted to share it with me. And I said, please stop. But you know, they didn't want it to tell me anyway. But I had to say, I can't be your judge. I have to assign you one of the alternate judges because I know too much about the facts now.
Yeah.
And that does happen occasionally, but not very often. Let's see. Anyway, I think that's positive. Here's something I think to think about. I think the community support docket is a way that if you can help a certain set of people not go to circuit court or not come back to municipal court, that is positive. Any amount of people that you have helped that doesn't enter that cycle, we've done something positive. I can't tell you that it's a huge number, but I can tell you that it's a reasonable number to worth doing. And that's what matters. Is it going to fix everything? No, it's not. And a lot of individuals are going to end up in circuit court, and they may have to get evaluated. And I read another article that some people have been waiting 9 months or a year on a misdemeanor before you're even going to get evaluated. And I can't control that, and that's not something that we're going to do in municipal court. Those type of evaluations are really something that's more serious. Project Homeless Connect. I did. Last year, one of my new innovations I was going to try was actually go to Project Homeless Connect, which is twice a year, and have the court be there. My main idea was we could give people court dates if they didn't know their court date or connect with individuals. I've had really mixed results. It depends on the place, actually. Sometimes no one wants to come anywhere near our table, right? They walk like the plague around it. Other times, and it's actually been the different venues. I don't know why they're different, but they are. I've had a lot more engagement of, sometimes it has to do with individuals who are in community support doctors that have had positive results. They'll say hi, and then it's okay. And then other people come up, well, I do have a court date, or I might have a court date in circuit court, and we can look that up for them. I have been ready with Andrea to recall a warrant. I've never had to do it. We haven't had somebody come up to us that had a warrant for me. Now, I can't recall a circuit warrant. And so if they had a circuit warrant, I would just say, you need to go turn yourself in. I can't do that for you. But we've never had that issue come up. So that's mixed results. I think it's valuable to... You don't want people to be afraid. You want people to come to court and handle the problem. And so I think that little bit of outreach kind of takes some of the fear off. I don't know if it's super successful, but it's been worth trying. I've tried lots of different experiments in municipal court. I can talk to you about some of my great failures here in a little bit, but it's worth trying things. If you don't try things, you don't learn anything. Property services docket. This was a prosecutor-requested docket. Where it really focuses on all the things to do with housing. We just started that last year. And it was so busy that we actually bumped the time back from once a month, 11 o'clock, like we do community support, to 10:30. And that really helped alleviate because they had so many people that are coming in. And again, this is another problem-solving docket. So obviously, what is the number one goal of a housing issue or a weeds issue or whatever we have in the city? Well, it's to fix it, right? And so if you can get it fixed, and if the prosecutor can immediately know from city staff, so city staff comes and is there, so that they can immediately update the prosecutor, because otherwise that communication would take another docket entry, right, to get there. Instead, everybody's there in the same room, and they much more quickly can say, oh, yeah, the washer and dryer that was out front is gone, the weeds are down, we've got half the house painted, the one gutter that's broken is now fixed, and then those cases can be resolved more quickly. The certificate of compliance is now taken care of for the Airbnb or whatever else is going on. If you don't want people to come back, you have to solve problems. Now, some people don't want their problem solved, and they just want to pay a fine, and that's fine. That's the mechanism. And some people will only bring their problems to the next level, which is circuit court, and not solve it. But it's a very small percentage. And so here's one of the things, two things I think that's really important about municipal court. I tell all my staff, hopefully you really like your mom, but I want you to treat everybody who comes in here like it's your mom. With the worst day that your mom's had. And I think it's important that you give people, you want the 80% of people that this is their first and last experience with any court to have a good experience where they made a mistake, they resolved it, and we moved on. And you focus the experience for that general person's, not the 5% of people that do not care and are going to go through the system no matter what and have already been through the system because you're not going to help them. And I think it's more important to focus on everybody else. And that's what we do. Solving the underlying problems really does help prevent people from coming back because, right, if it's painted now, we're not going to have that issue at least for a little while. If you get your driver's license or if you have insurance, we're not going to have that issue for a whole
Sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine. You're fine. Budget. We're about approximately $1 million. We have 8.75 FTE. That's as little FTE as the court's had in the last 19 years. And a lot of that has to do with caseload. We're actually operating with 6.75 FTE because we will ramp up as police get more and more individuals and Jill, you know, puts those assets forward. But with the pandemic, we had this plunge and no parking tickets during the pandemic. And then we actually had a further drop down where the court was really being underutilized. Now the new chief is trying to have different traffic tickets. So we've seen a big bump in traffic tickets.
Yeah.
A big bump. But not nearly to the level like that we used to be, right? So as those resources come online, and I'm just going to tell you, I'm not talking about things that are, you know, piddly. I'm talking about 30 miles an hour over on Scott Boulevard where people have to back out onto that road.
Yes.
That's not okay.
No.
School zone violations. We have some officers and the chief who are really caring and targeting what are dangerous to people. And I think that's important. And so I think I will. I think we'll see the continue back up. I think we're hearing a lot more parking tickets are now getting filed. And I'm sure you're hearing about that too. And so, of course, there's a certain level of individuals who are not going to pay any parking tickets. And so at some point, prosecutor's going to file a pile of those, and I'm going to send them a summons. And so that's going to happen too. So as that ramps up, we're going to fill those positions. So I don't plan on cutting any budget substantially, maybe little pieces here and there, but I plan on maintaining it and filling it. Obviously, every time you have a new dedicated thing, the prosecutor's office just got approved for a new position this year to help with some of the other type ordinance violations. Ordinance violations are down, but every time you put more resources from the executive, those then funnel that way. And you could overwhelm us immediately if you put enough resources to it. And so the balance is always have enough resources available, but I always try to manage it as best I can so that if I can save a little bit for you, I'm going to save a little bit. So I try really hard to do that. I expect there'll be more traffic tickets, and I expect there'll be more DWI enforcement as the grants and things and those resources are put together and more people get trained. Certainly those numbers are down, but I think they'll go back up. So I don't plan to make any major cuts. And then as all that gets deployed, then those resources will go, and they'll come to municipal court. What other questions do you have? And I hope I touched on everything.
I got Roy and then Nick.
Okay. One of my questions is, how often do you offer and give people the option for SIS?
It's routine. So the prosecutor tells me if they're opposed or not. So typically when the prosecutor makes the facts and recommendation when I ask for that, so the person has pled guilty.
SIS.
Suspended imposition of sentence. Sorry, thank you.
Thank you.
And so let me explain what that is really quickly. A suspended imposition of sentence means I put you on probation with conditions, usually court costs, community service work, and some other conditions, for a period of time, either 12 months for something minor or 2 years for the DWI. And if you are successful during that time frame, it becomes a closed record and does not count as a conviction. If you are not successful, I am super disappointed in you and I have full range of punishment. So don't do that, is what I usually say. That's what it is. And so if you do not have any prior convictions, the prosecutor 100% of the time pretty much says, I'm not opposed to an SIS. And so how I usually present it to somebody is they'll also recommend a fine amount. Let's say it's a speeding ticket, 15 over. Prosecutor recommends whatever the standard fine amount is, just like if they paid it out of court. And I say, look, I'm going to give you two options. You can tell me what you'd like to do. Here's the fine amount, but you get 2 points in your driver's license. Or here, I can grant you an SIS, and here's the basic terms of it, and then I go over the rest of the terms with them. But it's pretty routine.
Okay. I have three questions in total.
Yeah.
My second one is about repeat offenders for trespassing, because
sure.
Eventually those end up start going to jail.
So they, okay. Yes and no. So municipal court typically is not the place of jail. And it depends on how you're talking about going to jail. Eventually, they do go to jail on a warrant sometimes. And eventually, sometimes, if it's serious enough sets of facts or if there's enough numbers and they're not coming to municipal court, sometimes an officer will choose to send it to state court. And at state court, there's a whole different system about jail.
So when they're
arrested, and a public defender and other things, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
So when they're arrested for trespassing on the same place, they typically get arrested to jail and then eventually come to you and get a fine.
So they don't go to jail usually now. That would be very rare. So usually they're going to get a summons to come to me unless they have a warrant currently pending. Now, if they have a warrant currently pending, they're going to go to jail. But you aren't going to go to jail in a municipal court without a warrant. Okay. The only thing that's on my bond list is a DWI. So the Supreme Court does not want any municipalities to have bond lists. The old system was a judge sets all these different charges, and here's the bond amounts. I have one charge on my bond list. It's $500 for DWI. And the reason I left it on there for officers was, what if someone is so intoxicated that they feel like that they're a danger to themselves or the public if they were to release them on a summons? And I will also tell you, from all the pre-sentence investigations I've done on DWIs, many, many times officers are driving people home to their houses to make sure that that doesn't occur. Now, at state court, they have a whole bond schedule, and the Supreme Court has basically told municipal courts, we don't want you to have any bond schedule. You better not, basically, unless you really, really need it. But at state court, they don't have that limitation, so they have a bond schedule, and they will then have to go. But that's state court, not municipal court.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Sorry. Over-explanation.
Yeah, it's okay. Last question is, you've told us a lot of how everything is working, like a well-oiled machine. Give us a few examples where, or areas where you could use help or build some things up, because we all know that everything is not perfect in every situation. So where are some places that you need help or are struggling?
The best thing that could happen in my mind as far as resources are is to be able to put resources towards areas that there are problems, so that those areas, during the pandemic, I felt like it was a free-for-all of speeds and no one stopped for stop signs anymore. I saw someone, I was going to work.
Kavanaugh, don't go on a tangent.
Okay. Wait, my point is applying those resources to the things that protect the public is important. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that's important, and I know you guys are already working on that. The second point is that really important, as I mentioned earlier, is if we can get the automated system of these tickets to go quickly from CPD to the prosecutor's office, which I think is possible, then the prosecutor can review those faster. And then the individuals who just want to take care of their cases online can do it faster. That, to me, is resources well expended.
Okay.
I have enough staffing right now, and if I got overwhelmed, I would come back to you guys in a heartbeat. It happened to me with parking tickets once. I had to come back mid-year and say, I need three more people, and my arm really hurts. But if I have the resources to handle it, I will handle it. I feel like I've got really good staff. I do have some high turnover rates because some of it's a tough job. But some of my upper staff are excellent. I don't know if you guys remember, I met Andrea, some of you have. She's the court administrator, and she is awesome. She started out working.
Right.
Yeah. She started out working at the window, and it's done every single position in our office. That is invaluable experience as far as training people. So we've got a good system over time of allowing people to move up. If I need something, I'll ask you, but right now I couldn't think off the top of my head what's the pivotal resources that would fix everything. I don't have that. Thank you, though.
Nick?
Well, really just two or three observations. One, I think that probably you saw more people at First Baptist when Project Homeless Connect was there than at Mumsy, in large part because there was more room and they could avoid you more easily.
I actually think the less room caused more interactions.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Second, I think that the DIVRT program is a successful program. And one of the reasons that sometimes, one of the frustrations about this kind of work is that sometimes you don't know what happens to someone.
Right.
But what happens is there's an intervention, they're provided what they need, they don't need to come back, and so you don't see them. You just aren't able to close the loop on that, and I'm sure that's true with DIVRT and with the docket as well.
DIVRT, the whole purpose is not to see me.
Right, exactly.
And so I'll never know that.
Yeah, so if you're not seeing them, I'd say that's by and large probably a good thing, and you just have to assume it. And the other thing is I did have the opportunity to go to the community docket a couple of months ago, finally, and I just want to say that I think that you're doing a great job of holding people accountable and doing so in a compassionate way. And by providing those interventions, that saves the public money, I think.
I think so.
And saves a lot of people more time and more resources that they don't have. It's breaking a cycle very often. And I know that it's difficult work and it's not always successful, but it is successful often enough that I think we can feel very, very good about it.
I think we are making a difference. I really believe that. Because if I didn't, I would try something else. And we try to tweak it as best we can to make it more positive. And the social worker being there and all so the people being there, that has helped. And that's making every time you add a resource, I think you help a little bit of a next layer. You're not going to completely fix everything. It doesn't work that way. But you can hit another 5% or another 7% with that resource, and then you got to decide where do you put your resources.
I appreciate that you try things.
Sure.
Thank you.
No problem. They don't always work. My stormwater failure is one of my worst.
Try beats everything.
You don't know until you try it.
Have you seen those stormwater stickers that are on the drains? I thought I had the best community service work thing ever by putting those on the drains. Oh, you can do community service work in your own neighborhood, put the stickers out there.
No, I didn't.
Until someone lost a box and I found out they were $1.50 a piece.
Oh, well.
The program ended. I thought, well, we'll educate people about stormwater too, right? Yeah. Perfect. Very great academic idea, terrible in practice.
Fun idea.
No, fun. You try, you know. Right. If you don't fall, you'll never get back up.
Right.
All right, I'm going to ask Cav to stay in here, and then I'm going to make our motion for closed session so the other staff can leave. So I moved at the City Council of the City of Columbia, Missouri to immediately go into a closed meeting here in Conference Room 1A, 1B of City Hall to discuss the hiring, firing, disciplining, or promoting of particular employees by a public governmental body when personal information about the employees discussed or recorded pursuant to Section 610.0213 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri, and individually identifiable personnel records, performance ratings, or records pertaining to employees or applicants for employment pursuant to Section 610.02113 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri.